Christians constitute by far the most widely persecuted religion in the world. That was one of the key findings of the Bishop of Truro's report, commissioned by the then Foreign Secretary, Jeremy Hunt. We talked about the report when it was published in July. The government subsequently accepted the report's recommendations. And the deadline for responses was this Friday. And some organisations have raised concerns about aspects of the report, including its methodology. Let's talk to the Reverend Bonnie Evans-Hills, who's a coordinator for UK Coalition, an organisation that works with the UN Office for Genocide Prevention. It has submitted a response on behalf of a number of faith groups and academics. And Andrew Boyd, spokesperson for Release International, which monitors the persecution of Christians around the world. I should say we did ask the Bishop of Truro, the Right Reverend Philip Mount-Stephen, to take part today, but he was unavailable. Welcome to both of you. Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Just feeling that way. I've been up so long already this morning. Let me come to you first of all, Andrew. What's your sense? What do you make of the overall picture of Christians and the experience of Christians in the world offered in this report?
Well, Release International is absolutely delighted that the government has recognised that the persecution of Christians is increasing around the world by just about every measurable standard, and has pledged to take the protection of Christians and the issue of religious freedom into the very heart of government policy. As Jeremy Hunt himself said, the Foreign Secretary commissioning the report, this is a wake-up call. It really is time now to recognise what is going on and to address it, and it gives the government the teeth in order to do it. It's a good thing Release International welcomes it.
Bonnie, you have some concerns about, I think, the methodology also.
I mean, when you mentioned that there's an increase in persecution of Christians worldwide, actually there's an increase of, harassment or threat of violence to people of all religion, whether they're Christian or Muslim or Hindu or Jewish. There's an increase altogether in hate crime across the globe. If you want to include, put in statistics around Christians, well, actually, Christians make up the greater majority of those of people of faith across the globe. So, of course, if there's an increase in violence against people of religion, then, of course, that's going to be an increase against Christians, and the greater majority are going to be Christians.
But the problem is that the issue's been underreported for years when it comes to the persecution of Christians. And maybe that's a legacy of embarrassment towards a colonial past. But what we mustn't do is mistake it for an embarrassment towards the Christian message. Everybody has to have the freedom to be able to choose which faith they believe in and the freedom to follow that faith. So, yes, you're absolutely right. When you talk about, for instance, the plight of the Muslim minority in Burma, the appalling oppression that's taking place there. Freedom of religion and faith is the most fundamental belief. Every other freedom depends on that, but the reporting of Christian persecution, perhaps because of this post-colonial embarrassment, has been massively underreported, and this report redresses that balance.
Well, let me try to pin this down a little bit more in terms of some of the figures in here, Bonnie, because we find in this report 80% of the religious persecution in the world, of people persecuted for religious reasons across the world, is Christianity. 80%. Do you challenge that figure?
Well, yes, I do, I'm afraid. And I think it's for legitimate reasons, in that if we overstate something, then the very real violence that's done against Christians or any people of faith across the globe is then not taken seriously. If, this figure of 80% came from a website that no longer holds the figure on it, it's unsubstantiated. The methodology of how they reach this percentage is not transparent.
What do you think is the more accurate percentage?
Well, if you look on Pew Research, which is one of the sources of the report, there is a page that refers to the number of countries where religious groups are harassed by the year. And if you look at that, then I think I wrote in our response, I was trying to be generous, then about 35% of those countries where Christians are persecuted or harassed It's about 35% is what I wrote.
So, Andrew, on these
I think that's massively, massively underplaying it. And if you look at the Bishop of Truro's report, he acknowledges that that figure is no longer on their website. There's virtually nothing on their website at all. But he says he's spoken to them and they stand by that estimate and suggest actually it's probably a conservative estimate. If you look at the Pew report,
80% is conservative.
That's what they say. The Pew report says 144 countries. That's a rise from 125. That by the most conservative estimates, the persecution of Christians is rising.
All right.
And for once, a report is making that point.
Let me break in. Let's just set aside the statistical debate for a second, because the reality you both agree on is that religious persecution needs to be dealt with in the world.
Absolutely.
Whichever metric we use to estimate the scale of it, and whether it's colonial guilt or something else, but let's come to that question, because that's really important,
absolutely.
Bonnie. How do we deal with it?
Well, I think when I was speaking with the people from OSCE, which is the Organizations for Security and Cooperation, and they also work alongside the Organization for Democratic and Institutions and Human Rights, they monitor human rights across the globe. And when I was speaking with the individual who's responsible for monitoring violence or harassment against Christians, she was pointing out that we have to be very clear in our methodology of exactly what it is that we're talking about. Sometimes what is considered to be religious persecution or religious harassment is in actuality due to something else. For example, you might have Christians or Muslims or Hindus or Jews living in a particular area, and there are resources that somebody wants. Somebody wants that land, somebody wants that resources, and their tribe is used as a kind of excuse for taking over the resources in the land. And I think that's probably something of what has been happening in Myanmar, what is happening with the Uyghur and in China.
All right. And so presumably your point is, if we deal with some of those resource questions, we might deal with some of the persecution issues. Andrew, is that
absolutely
a sufficient, is that
a
sufficient response? Andrew Boyd?
No, it's absolutely not sufficient. As you say in your own response to the report, the issue is really very, very complex. It's not simple and it's not black and white, but one of the characteristics we see in the growing number of reported incidents that Release is dealing with of the persecution of Christians is coercion in religion. That's a clear factor here, especially under militant Islam. It's convert or be killed. Literally, it's Islam under the sword. And that violence, however politically incorrect it may be to talk about it, that violence has to be recognized, that violence has to be addressed, and that violence has to be stopped.
Andrew Boyd and the Reverend Bonnie Evans-Hills, my thanks to both of you. We can talk now with the Conservative MP, Remen Chisti, who is recently appointed the Prime Minister's Special Envoy for Freedom of Religion and Belief. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Well, let's get your response to that rather sparky debate there about just how we should measure the scale of religious abuse across the world, particularly when it comes to Christianity. How seriously are you taking it?
Well, let me make this point very clear. And I heard what Bonnie and Andrew were saying, and I think they both agreed. And I think everyone would agree across the all different stakeholders that freedom of religion, practice and belief is one of the key foundations of a free society. And everything else underpins that. And with regards to the government's commitment, the Prime Minister has been very clear from the very outset that, you know, promoting religious freedom, practice and belief is a key priority for the government. And that comes to your point, is with regards to the data and with regards to the report that we've had from Bishop Truro. Before I, come out with any further statements, what I would say is I spoke to Bishop Philip and I spoke to all the other key stakeholders. I met with CSW. I met with representatives from Open Doors. And I would say what Jeremy Hunt said when he launched the findings of the report in July, he said, "But I'm not convinced that our efforts on behalf of Christians have always matched the scale of the problem or indeed have reflected the evidence that it is Christians who frequently endure the heaviest burden of persecution."
All right. And just in a second, just in a sentence, if you can, do you agree with Andrew that that's a feature of colonial guilt?
Well, what I would say is rather than looking out what how you may phrase it from the past, let's look to the future. And that's what my job is to do. My
well, then tell me what you will be doing. What is your new role?
Well, my role is to ensure that, you know, I engage with all the key stakeholders from civil society and from faith organizations and work with international partners, you know, with multilateral organizations, my counterparts in the United States, to ensure that we do everything we possibly can to ensure that citizens around the world are able to freely and openly practice their faith and to build on the excellent work that my good colleague Lord Ahmed did when he was the Prime Minister's Special Envoy for Religious Freedom.
So one of the recommendations of this report, which the government has accepted, is the possibility of sanctions targeting countries with a record of religiously based abuse, particularly against Christians. When you look at some of the UK's major commercial allies around the world, I mean, they are serious offenders in this area, aren't they?
Well, I think we've been very clear, actually. If you look at the 2018 Magnitsky Act, you know, with regards to serious violations on human rights, that went through Parliament. And it went through Parliament without being opposed by anyone. And these recommendations make it very, very clear that as a tool, and it is a tool as part of the wider tools a government has, that we will take those actions with regards to those individuals who carry out, you know, persecution of individuals based on their faith.
And yes, which countries do you believe are the principal abusers?
Well, what I'm saying is, you didn't hear what I said. I said individuals who persecute. Let me give you an example.
But countries also.
Let me give you an example. Say, for example, those individuals who came out on the streets in Pakistan when Asha Bibi was acquitted by the Supreme Court of Pakistan.
Yes.
If those individuals linked to the organizations, it was Tariq-e-Labbaik, who were calling for individuals to be killed or who were supporting for her freedom, those kind of individuals would quite clearly come into this category of those who where sanctions would apply. But let me make it very clear.
It's very difficult to put economic sanctions on individuals. You put them on countries, don't you?
I think the sanctions are with regards, my view, I think you look at all tools. Sanctions, for me, specifically against those individuals. Who, in my view, individuals who carry out persecution of individuals with regards to their faith. But we have to look at all the tools, and that means engaging, with diplomacy with other countries around the world to ensure that individuals can practice
all right,
their
well,
faith.
Now, you have in the past, you've been critical, obviously, of the government's handling of the Asia Bibi case. You resigned as vice chair of the Conservative Party on that issue.
Yes.
Remind people she was convicted of blasphemy in Pakistan. And you resigned over the government's seeming reluctance to deal with her, grant her asylum in the UK. Will you be calling out this government for its failings, possible failings, in this new role? For example, if it doesn't tackle commercial partners of the United Kingdom, like Saudi Arabia, who may be commercially and strategically important, but their record on religious freedom is abysmal.
Well, let me make it very clear. It wasn't just I who called out the government's then action of not doing, in my view, the right thing, of offering the opportunity to Asha Bibi and her family, who I met her family, to come to the United Kingdom.
But you did resign over the issue.
Yeah. Yes, and that's the point I make. I took a principled decision. And so everyone and stakeholders will know that I'm somebody who takes principled decisions. With regards to your specific point, will I continue to do that? Yes. The then Foreign Secretary, the previous Foreign Secretary, now the Prime Minister, you know, also supported me.
So we should expect to hear you calling out the government and telling them to put human rights ahead of commercial interests.
What I would say to you is this. Let's be practical. The practical is we have to engage with all different countries around the world. And it's about, you know, engaging through diplomatic means, through multilateral institutions, the OSCE, the Human Rights Council, the United Nations, which is what my good colleague Lord Ahmed did on the 22nd of August at the United Nations. So I will be working with all partners to ensure that
Raymond
people
Chisley,
are able to practice their religion freely.
We've got to leave it there. Thank you very much. That is it from this week's Sunday. Emily Buchanan will be in the chair next week. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.